Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, your one stop for creative inspiration. We have a terrific hour of ideas and tips for you today, so let's get to it. Here's your host, Pat Sloan.
Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm Pat Sloan. Today I have four guests. It's so exciting. We're talking designing, we're talking scraps, we're talking quilts. My first designer is Jacqueline Steves of The Noble Wife. She is a fabulous artist. She designs fabric, she has patterns and books. And today I asked Jacqueline to come on and chat with me a little bit about the design process, but more about, you know, what we do on the internet, because she's very internet connected, and because this is an online radio show, I know you are too. So hi, Jacqueline, how are you?
Hi, I'm great, Pat. How are you?
I am excited to have you here. I want to. Your blog is amazing. You have you're so generous. You have tons of information. Tell me, did you start blogging thenoblewife.blogspot.com? Did you start blogging there right away, like before you were designing? How'd that happen for you?
Yeah, I think it was probably right around the same time. I didn't specifically like start designing and then think, oh, I need a blog, or mm-hmm. I didn't have a blog and think, oh, maybe I'll be a designer. It kind of happened organically all at the same time. But it was like when blogs were brand new, and it amazed me that like anybody could have a blog. So I was like, oh, you mean, like I could have a blog? And to me, it was just a great way to like meet other creative people, you know, and just kind of interact that way. So.
You know what? Tell me a little bit about what you do on your blog, because you do a bit more than just talk about your quilting and your designing.
Yeah, I have a lot of different kinds of things on there. I just really enjoy being creative and being like a creative homemaker. Mm-hmm. So I have sewing and quilt things on there. But it's, I think of it more as a reflection of my life, what goes on in my life. So we have, like, cooking and crafts and decorating and, you know, photos from travel. And if I find a great little shop with, like, really inspirational type things, I'll take pictures and put it on the blog. Or, you know, museums and gardens where I get a lot of inspiration, we'll put photos on there. So, yeah, it's kind of just a journal of my creative life.
Right. And you also talk about your family, and you're a gorgeous photographer. I was just looking at the happy couple going out to look for their first Christmas tree.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, my daughter got married back in June. And yeah. So it's been a lot of fun. You know, she was never really interested in homemaking type things. Like, I would try to teach her to cook, and she really wasn't interested. Mm-hmm. But now that she's married and she has her own apartment, she's kind of become this little domestic goddess. She's wanting to cook and do decorating. And so she actually helps me a lot with the blog. She does a guest blog post every Friday.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
It's usually because she is young and she's at a beginning stage. All of her projects that she does are geared towards beginners and people in their 20s. So I think it's nice we have kind of a nice mix, balance of, you know, different levels of projects that you could do on the blog.
You know, I think that's really, really neat that the two of you have that common thing that you'll do and a place to share it. That's pretty amazing. I don't know of anybody else doing that with their kids.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's always, I've always just, like I said, I try to teach her to cook and she didn't seem interested. So now that she's interested in these kinds of things, it's like, it's really fun for me because now we get to, you know, buddy around and do all these things together. And we work on the blog together, you know, talk about what we want to put on there, talk about what we want to put in the newsletter. So it's really, really been fun having her work, you know, alongside me on these things.
Well, let's talk about newsletters, because that's another thing that a lot of people have, like American Patchwork and Quilting Magazine has a newsletter that goes out every week. People can sign up for it at allpeoplequilt.com. You have a newsletter, and I have a newsletter. These are email newsletters that go out.
Right.
Yours is monthly, is that right?
It's about 7 times a year. It's every other month, and then usually we do one for December just for Christmas and holiday.
Yeah, yeah. So what kind of things do you put in yours? Because you, like your blog, your newsletter is full of really inspirational things. I think they're inspirational because, of course, I subscribe to your newsletter.
Thank you. It's kind of an extension of the blog where I just like to do a lot of different things, so I like to share a lot of different things. So on the newsletter, I mean, you'll find the typical things like sales and upcoming events and that kind of thing. But then there's always a recipe. There's always a free embroidery pattern, a craft product or two, maybe a decorating idea. And they're usually seasonal. So, you know, like the October, November issue is all about fall ideas, fall recipes, Thanksgiving things. So it's really fun to kind of put a theme, you know, put the newsletter together with a theme and just have like different ideas and projects that go with that theme.
I really like your stitcheries, Jacqueline, because they're simple. They're, like you said, they're seasonal, and people can just download those.
Yeah. There's a PDF for all of them, so people can just download them and just do whatever they want with them. I mean, they don't even have to use them. If they don't embroider, they could transfer them on the cardstock and, you know, like make a little note card or something out of them. There's a lot of things that you could do with them because they're just basically line drawings. So you could do a lot of different things with them.
And you're a painter first. Is that correct assessment?
Yeah. I'm a self-taught illustrator, painter. I've been doing that for probably close to 15 years. So that's kind of my first love. I like doing a lot of different things. So I was also doing quilting as a hobby. Mm-hmm. Somehow, I went from illustration to being a quilt designer, and then it kind of came full circle and becoming a fabric designer because now I do the illustration, which then lends itself to the fabric design. So that's been a really fun journey.
Tell me about your latest fabric design. You designed with Henry Glass.
Yes. The most recent line out in stores is called Fruitful Hands. And it's a fruity kitchen theme, fruits and vegetables, really yummy, fruity colors. And it was actually inspired by a book that I did for Kansas City Star last year, which was also called Fruitful Hands. And my design director at Henry Glass saw the book because I put a lot of illustrations in the book, and she said, oh, you know, a lot of these would lend themselves really well to a fabric line. So we just kind of made that jump, took some of the illustrations from the book, and elaborated on them, and then made that into a fabric line.
Ah, now where can people see the fabric line? Do you have a place on your website? Or?
There's a page on my website called My Fabric where they can see color cards of all my different fabric lines. Okay. I know it's also available at Fat Quarter Shop, so if they're interested in purchasing it, they could go to Fat Quarter Shop and buy yardage.
Okay, very good. That's always good to know.
Want to know where they can buy it.
Right, yes, it's always good to know. So how do your books come about? You said this one came about the book came first, and then you did fabric off of it. Is that normally how you work?
Yeah, this is my only book so far. It was my first book.
Oh, okay.
And fabric lines, they're always kind of different how they originate. Sometimes, you know, I have an idea for a theme and I'll work on it, or the design director at Henry Glass will say, oh, I have an idea, maybe you want to work on this. Sometimes I have like a color palette in my head, like certain colors that I really want to work with, and I'll try to figure out, you know, a theme that I could use to bring out that palette. So they're all kind of different in the way they originate. There's I don't just sit down and go, okay, now I'm going to design a fabric line, and I don't have a specific way that I do every one. They're all different.
They're all different, yeah. And do you keep, an idea folder? I mean, do you have something like that? I'm always curious, you know, how, you know, people, particularly since you're a painter, do you have, like, some, you know, does it a folder
yeah,
of stuff that
you
go to?
I don't really have, like, I know a lot of people use sketchbooks. I don't. I just use regular, like, copy paper. And I just scribble stuff down, and I stick it in a manila folder.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also kind of the queen of Post-its. Yep. Like, I've got thousands of Post-its all over my office, all over my studio with little, you know, like notes to myself and doodles and drawings and ideas and stuff. And, that's kind of my way of they're all over the Post-it notes. So that's one way that
I keep track of all my ideas. The napkins also. You do the little sketch when you're somewhere.
Yeah.
And you...
Yeah, because you never know when an idea is going to show up. Sometimes you're sitting at dinner and you come up with an idea. You know, you're sitting in a restaurant and you see something, you know, maybe a painting on the wall or something that gives you an idea, and you have to write it down because I've learned, I've tried to, you know, like remember, and I think I'm going to remember it when I get home, and I don't. So I've learned that I have to write everything down, like the second that I think of it.
Yeah, I wish I was real organized, Jacqueline, to have like a notebook with me all the time, like some people do, but you know, it doesn't happen.
Yeah, I don't either. Or I email myself notes.
Yeah, you know, like if I do that too. Yeah.
I get out my cell phone and I'll just email myself a note because guaranteed by the time I get home, I wouldn't have remembered it anyway.
Yep. So tell me your website name, because that's where your store is and people can go see your patterns.
Right. It's thenoblewife.com.
Right.
And there's all kinds of, there's a free pattern page on there. Also, there's fabric for sale. My book is for sale on there. I also make handmade wool pins, which I sell, and all the profits for those are donated to charity. So there's a lot of stuff to buy on the website, in addition to the free patterns. I've got the newsletter archives on there. If anybody's interested in the newsletter, you know, what that looks like, they can go to the archives and look at all the old issues and, you know, download all of the project sheets, the PDFs for all the old issues.
Oh, that's great. And you also even take your artwork and put it on cards.
Yeah. Well, that's actually, and the note cards were before I started the quilting business, because I was doing illustration. I did a line of note cards with my art on them, so I have those on my website too.
Neat. You just have so much going on. So the free patterns are actually at your site, thenoblewife.com.
Yeah, I think there's a link on my blog too. If you go to the blog to the top and it says free stuff, I think that's a link right over to the free pattern page also.
Free stuff. That's always a nice link to see.
Yeah.
You're so very generous, my dear.
Thank you. I just, like I said, there's a lot of people out there like me, I think, that just like to do a lot of creative things. I call myself a hobby collector, you know, so I just like to share what I'm doing and, you know, have other people write and show me what they're doing, and it's just fun.
Well, Jacqueline, this has been amazing. Thank you for being on the show today.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So we've been talking to Jacqueline Steves of thenoblewife.com, and then you can get to all her other things. This is American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. We'll be right back.
Ready for a new project? Choose from hundreds of free patterns in the Projects and Ideas section of our website, allpeoplequilt.com.
Introducing the new Bernina 7 Series machines with the latest sewing and embroidery innovations, including an extended free arm and embroidery area, the Bernina Stitch Regulator, and a world's first, the B9 Hook. So quieter, faster, and without interruption. With up to 1,000 stitches per minute and 80% more bobbin thread capacity than our standard bobbins, there's no limit to your creativity. For more information, visit Bernina.com/7 Series. Bernina, made to create.
Welcome back to the Fall 2012 Moda Fabrics Fashion Show. These collections are hot, hot, hot. Fig Tree is back with a new collection called Tapestry, which weaves together Greek and Moroccan influences for a beautiful result. We're mad for the plaids in the WeWoven's Brights collection. Next, pull up an Adirondack chair and enjoy the Ocean View by Paul Brent. And finally, Three Sisters delivers a delicious helping of double chocolate with scrumptious colors of dark chocolate, cherry, caramel, and vanilla bean. Stay tuned for more runway reporting. Visit your local quilt shop to see these fashionable lines and more from Moda Fabrics.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Keltner, Executive Editor of American Patchwork and Quilting, and I'd like to invite you to join me in making a pillowcase and making a difference. It's easy. Make and donate pillowcases in your local community. Use your favorite pattern or choose from one of the free patterns at allpeoplequilt.com. Whether you sew pillowcases with a group or by yourself, you can help someone less fortunate. You could donate them to a women's shelter, boys or girls club, homeless shelter, veterans home, or any other organization you know of in need. Once you donate the pillowcases, log on to allpeoplequilt.com. Click on the box in the upper right-hand corner for the 1 million pillowcase challenge and enter the number of pillowcases you created to our national tally. We know quilting changes everything, and we're out to show the world just how much quilters care. Please join the American Patchwork and Quilting 1 million pillowcase challenge. We're counting on you.
Win $10,000 cash to stock your stash. Enter today to win the ultimate $10,000 crafting giveaway at allpeoplequilt.com/craft giveaway.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. This is your host, Pat Sloan. My next guest is Gail Kessler. Gail might be just about the first person I met in the quilt industry. She has worked with the fabric companies over the years, several fabric companies. She's now with Andover. And the reason why I met Gail so many years ago is because she's always had a job where she works with the designers in the industry. That's one of the functions that she's always seemed to do. So that means she would make contact with us and give us fabric. It's like, yay, we know Gail. That's a good thing. So I'm happy to have her on here because not only is Gail work with Andover as their marketing director, but she is also a designer herself. And because she has, you know, all this free time, she also runs a quilt shop. So hi, Gail, how are you?
Well, hi, Pat. It's great to catch up with you. I know we're always both on the run and we have known each other for such a long time. So what a great way to connect. Hi.
Yeah, this is,
hi and hi, everybody out there.
You know, I'm really curious because you've had your store for a very long time and you've been working for fabric companies for a very long time. So this is sort of like the chicken or the egg, you know, which came first for you? The store,
well,
the
actually,
companies?
Yeah, the store by far. Actually, I started off as a very part-time quilt instructor at a tiny little shop in Olney, Pennsylvania. And the classes went really well, and the shop owner asked me to please work at the store as an employee just a few hours a week. I did that, and then I worked a little bit more and became the manager, and about a year later I bought the shop and grew it into a substantial business. Now, back when I purchased the store, it was primarily a needlepoint shop. It was needlepoint, cross-stitch, knitting, and things like that, and it had a little tiny quilting department. So one of the reasons she brought me on was to help grow that part of the business. And things went really well, and one thing led to another. We started doing many blocks of the month and kits and started a big mail order operation. And then, of course, as a larger buyer, fabric companies would want, you know, they would pick my brain and ask my opinion because I was a big purchaser. And one thing led to another, and lo and behold, became marketing director for Andover, long story short, which has been a great, terrific company to work for and represent. I've loved every year of the now, I think we're going on our 12th year. So it's been quite a while with Andover. Yeah, it's been a long time.
And I think you went with them really when they first started. Is that my memory right?
That's correct. Back when Andover was still part of the Concord family, and there's a story involved with how that separated. But David Weinstein, who is the great grandson of the founder of Concord Fabrics, owns and operates Andover Fabrics, and he brought me on to help develop a look, a feel for the company, and I really felt that the best way to go was to be diverse. And my goal was to see to it that the salesmen were out there with their bags showing our line to various quilt shops, and the quilt shop owners would never know what's going to come out of that bag. We didn't have a one specific look. Mm-hmm. We were, you know, very diverse. And that's been really fun because over the years, the various designers that come on board have their own voice and have their own look. And it's great fun to watch and see how the looks evolve and develop and who becomes a superstar and who, you know, goes off into a slightly different direction than they did when they first started with us. So it's a great ride.
And you have designers like showing the diversity. Joe Morton, who does very traditional fabric lines, to Lonnie Rossi, who is a printmaker herself and has these great contemporary, very like hand-done looking work. So it's a great range.
It is a great range, and I'm really proud of the work that the designers do for us because they put a lot of care and thought and work into their submissions. They're very thorough with the way they submit their collections. They often know how the different designs would be used by quilters and sewers, and it makes our design studio's job a lot easier when they do think these things through. Now, many of our designers are quilters themselves, but some of our designers are not. They come from different licensing arenas, such as giftware or cards or things like that, and scrapbooking, and other looks that actually translate quite well to the sewing and quilting world, and their designs look great on fabric. So it's kind of my job to look around and see and go through the dozens and dozens of submissions we get every week to find the very best that would work into the Andover mix.
So what is it like? I'm sure there isn't one pat answer for this, but what is it like for you, the company Andover, to work with a designer? Does it really vary by person?
Yes, it varies quite a bit. Some of our designers hand paint. You mentioned Lonnie Rossi. Kim Schaefer is another one who actually paints out her designs. So we take those designs, and the studio has to render them in such a way that they go into a proper repeat. We have to scan and maybe rearrange some of the design elements so they flow on a piece of fabric in a pleasing way. Sometimes we have to resize them so that they fit within the parameters of the printing process. But we do that with great sensitivity, and we also make sure that our designers are part of that process. They see the process as it goes along. So, and then there are designers who do have textile backgrounds, and they do already know how to submit a collection and understand how to do repeat and, get colors and designs that play nicely and work well as a textile. So it really all depends. And then sometimes it's a license such as Winterthur or the International Quilt Studies Center, the Museum of New Mexico is another one. And that process is a little bit different where we'll go down to the museum and choose from archives. And these might be quilts, these might be other artifacts within the museum collection. And we pull together a collection based on perhaps a quilt or just perhaps an era of fabric or perhaps something else that'll be the catalyst for a collection.
And that must be really fun to be able to go out to the museums.
Fun. That's a great treat when you get to do that. And then there's other licenses such as Eric Carle, who publishes children's books. And there we want to be very careful and sensitive because let's say we're doing a line based on the Very Hungry Caterpillar, which has been a true rock star in our line. It's something that we reprint over and over again because who doesn't like the Very Hungry Caterpillar and the related stories and other books by Eric Carle. So we want to be very careful that everything is absolutely as close to his book publications and colors and so forth as possible. So that process is yet a little bit different.
So Gail, you personally, you designed Dimples, which a lot of people, you know, have yarded.
Thank you. Yes, they do, hopefully. Yes.
So, you've designed other lines, too.
Yes, I have. Over the years, I've designed quite a few collections. early on, I started to design because we were needing product, quite frankly. We were hiring designers. But during that process of growing the company, we found we needed to fill some holes. There were some gaps. We needed florals. We needed novelties. We needed brights. And so I tried to fill those gaps and come up with some ideas that I had that I thought would translate well in the quilting world. And having purchased many hundreds of thousands of yards of fabric over the years, I felt I had a pretty good handle on what people were looking for and what people liked. And because I am a shop owner, I also see what I felt was missing in,
right.
in the industry. And so I was able to do something about that. And it was great fun to design over the years, and I still enjoy doing that. And, you know, I hopefully get to do it a little bit more. Right now we're really busy with the new designers, which is quite fun and wonderful. My process might be similar to many designers, and it might be a little different. I am not a trained artist. Mm-hmm. I am a quilter, and I've used lots of different fabrics together for different projects and made, you know, hundreds and hundreds of quilts myself. Plus, I've taught thousands of people to quilt and put colors together. I've done numerous blocks of the month and things like that. So I will usually start off with either a purchase design or an idea that I will hire out for an artist to render. And then the collection will evolve around the theme fabric, which in our studio we call the mommy.
Right.
And then build all the babies around the mommy,
right.
and then the compliment and this and that, and it becomes the collection. So I'm kind of known for the theme fabric, such as my music line that was really big a couple of years ago. And that just simply started as an idea that I had for a continuous orchestra pit, which grew into a collection called Beautiful Music. And then after that, I followed up with Marching Band and Beautiful Voices, which is an orchestra-type print.
Yeah.
And
Gail, this has been, we're out of time, Gail.
We are. Oh, my gosh.
I know. So I'm going to tell you, everybody can visit you at ladyfingersewing.com
yes.
and andoverfabrics.com. Thank you, Gail.
Uh-huh. Hey, thanks, Todd. It was great.
Okay.
Bye.
We'll be right back.
Win free stuff. Find out about our newest online sweepstakes and contests and how you can enter at allpeoplequilt.com/promos.
We're back at the Fall 2012 Moda Fabrics Fashion Show. It's a great show, folks. Don't forget to mind your P's and Q's with Applejack, an alphabet-themed collection by Tim and Beck. Next, we're taking a journey to a whimsical land filled with cute critters, flowers, and sweet confections with Cherry on Top by Keiki. Hallelujah! The muted reds, navies, and creams of Old Glory Gatherings by Primitive Gatherings brings a nostalgic feel to the runway. And now, something for the men in your life. Trails End combines the beauty of fall leaves and wildlife. Stay tuned for more runway reporting and visit your local quilt shop to see these fashionable lines and more from Moda Fabrics.
10 colored fabric pens. One trusted embroidery machine. One DesignWorks software suite. 5 perfectly cut flowers. 250 glittering crystals. One dress as colorful as my imagination. Introducing the new DesignWorks software suite from Bernina. Includes cutwork for all the shapes that your creativity can imagine. Paintwork for all the designs you can picture. And crystal work. Easily add sparkle to your creations. For more information, visit your Bernina dealer. Bernina, made to create.
See what other quilters are up to on the American Patchwork and Quilting page on Facebook. Simply go to facebook.com and search for APQ Magazine.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm Pat Sloan. We're going to have Gail back on because she has so much information. We can learn a lot. So I now have Edie McGinnis from the Kansas City Star. She is an editor there at the Kansas City Star, publisher of books, and she's been with them since 1987. She's also an author herself. She has at least 17 books. I'm sure Edie must have even more than that. And her latest book is just so wonderful. It's called A Bag of Scraps, Quilts in the Garment District, where she has history in here, and I'm really excited to have Edie come on and tell us about that. So how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I am wonderful. Is this like a dream job that you have? Wouldn't we all love to play with quilts all day?
Well, most of the time it's a dream job. But, you know, there's always those times where that dream kind of turns into something else, you know, where your mistakes get printed.
Oh, no.
I hate that.
Oh, my goodness. So, you know, it's pretty exciting. I was out to the facility there, the Kansas City Star facility, for an open house that you all did this past spring or the spring before. It was amazing to see the part of the facility that we saw. It was a great exhibit.
You were at the press pavilion, right?
I think so.
Yeah.
So tell me, that is a brand new building,
and it is enormous and so much fun to watch the papers come through.
Yeah, it wasn't running in the evening, but there was a lot of the quilts from the books that were on display.
Right.
So tell me a little bit about your latest book, because I am fascinated about the history of quilts. I love it. I don't really want to do the research myself, so I'm really happy you do it for me.
Because that's something I really love doing is the research.
So tell me what's going on in the Bag of Scraps book.
Well, what I did was I was going to Hannibal, Missouri, just to do a little shop hopping with a friend of mine. And she said to me, she made this offhand comment and said, you know what, you really ought to do a book about Nellie Dawn. I'm going, you know, Nellie Dawn really doesn't fit into the quilting world so much, but boy, does ever the garment district. So that was kind of the nugget of the idea on how this all started. And I had a quilt, or have a quilt that has Princess Peggy fabric in it. Mm-hmm. And that was a dress factory in Peoria, Illinois. And I grew up around Peoria.
Oh.
So it was kind of a treat to have that quilt. My stepmother had given it to me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I took it all apart and made it into a fan quilt, but I cherished those scraps so much because you could see all of these pieces in different colorways. Mm-hmm. They'd be the same print, but it would be in red and black or green and yellow or orange or blue and yellow or whatever, but it would be the same print. And as we all know, no woman shops that way. No woman uh-huh. buys the same print in
right.
different colors to make their clothing. So it had to have come from a garment district, and I found out about that. So that was kind of the nugget of how the whole thing started. And, you know, it went from there, and then you talk to people and talk to them and talk to them and go to the library and every museum that you can find where they have fabric mm-hmm. and learn whatever you can learn.
So who did you talk to? Did you go to New York to the garment district or one of the garment districts somewhere else in the country?
Actually, Kansas City had one of the largest garment districts ever.
I didn't know that.
It was the second largest industry in Kansas City during its heyday and employed over 4,000 people. It was second only to the stockyards here in the Midwest.
Wow.
Yeah, it was huge. They had a big old tunnel where people who came from Kansas City, Kansas, they would go through this big old tunnel and they would be kind of burped out of the work area for the garment mm-hmm. district, and it's kind of a trolley type thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was huge, and you know, like you could run a sewing machine and not really speak English. You could, you know, be employable in this
mm-hmm.
industry,
mm-hmm.
Even if you were fresh to the country. So, which opened up another factor is how did those people get here? You know, so I got to explore that as well.
One thing led to the other. That's what you're telling me.
Yes, I'm nosy, so I got to find out all these things. You know, so.
You have some great photos in the book of factories and old machines. Are these from the publisher, or did you go out and find them in somewhere else?
Some of them were from. The Garment District Museum had permission to use them from there. Mm-hmm. But the Kansas City Star, I'm very fortunate to have access to their library where I can find pictures there as well. And then some pictures I got from the library in the Kansas City room
mm-hmm.
and purchased the use of those.
Oh, okay. All right. So did you actually find any people to talk to, or was this all all the people that normally would were, you know, older and passed away by now?
No, there's still people around because I talked to Ann. Oh, my goodness. Don't let me go brain dead now. I talked to Harvey Freed and Ann Brownfield. Mm-hmm. And Ann Brownfield was the designer for the garment district, and Harvey Freed had owned one of the factories. His company was called Style Line, and they worked mostly in wool. But my focus was to try to find out what had happened to those scraps.
Ah.
And one of the things that the scraps from Harvey's factory, that was wool, he sold to a guy they called a jobber. So the jobber would come and pick up the barrels of scraps.
Mm-hmm.
And then the jobber would take those and he would resell them. I'm going like, gee, what would you do with all those barrels of wool, you know, and thinking how nice that would be.
Because, right.
You know, get your hands on those.
Right.
Well, what they did with those was they sold them to a roofing company and used them for roofing material.
No way. Really?
Yeah. So then I found out that there was a place called Mary Dean Frock Company. Mm-hmm. And there were also a company called Ready Cut. And Ready Cut sold pre-cut, die-cut pieces. They'd be like for grandmother's flower garden.
Oh, okay.
Or whatever. You might have to pay 10 cents for a packet of those. And the ones that I had in the book were Dresden Plate. But nobody's ever really been able to prove that Mary Dean Frock Company put out the Ready Cut packets. But it's the same address, the same, you know, all these scraps, and which the Mary Dean Frock Company would have had, so they were all cotton. So an educated guess is that I probably nailed it.
Right, right. Yeah, all the everything points to that. How interesting. And then the book, you have, you know, several patterns. You have antique ones that you've done the patterns for, and then some that you've put in here new.
Yeah, I've probably only got one really new one, which is called I Drop My Little Basket. That one I designed myself. But what I really wanted to do was have the quilts that really proved my point.
Mm-hmm.
And I found quilts that did that.
Yeah.
And put them in there. So that's kind of cool. It's kind of fun.
Yeah. So you can find a the same pattern, the same colorway, different colorways of the same pattern showing that these were all the scraps from the mills.
That's a very good indication. It doesn't always prove it, though, because some kits were made, like John C. Michael Company out of Chicago. They made kits, and they used dress scraps for kits, and they would have had the same colorways. But not necessarily would they have just been scraps. And
right.
Bucilla Company, which was all they sold was kits, I do believe. And they would have bought fabric by the bolts. So they may have used the same print in different colorways in their kits. So it's really, you know, sometimes it's really tough to figure out.
Yeah. I just love that you did all the research so that we can just read about it.
Well, gives me a book to sell.
That's right. You got to buy the book, Bag of Scraps, Quilts in the Garment District. Okay, so you and I were talking before the show the other day, and I was asking you if you had like a favorite tip, and you said you have this neat way of making berries. Can you share that with us?
I sure can. I used some washout interfacing, or water-soluble interfacing, and I punched berries out of that interfacing using a paper punch. And I got the paper punch from a craft store, so you could get those in half-inch size or a three-quarter-inch size or one-inch size, or I think half-inch is about the smallest that they make those. Mm-hmm. And I found that I used this stuff from Gadget Girl that was the washout interfacing.
Okay.
And I would have to back that with paper. I'd have to put paper on the front and the back of that to have those cuts come out clean.
Mm-hmm.
But that worked like magic.
Mm-hmm.
And so I used that, and I would cut out a circle, but I would glue that circle on using some Elmer's glue.
Mm-hmm.
and put it onto my fabric, and then I could fold my fabric over that, and I didn't have anything to pull out at all. The worst part about that was sometimes you ended up with berries that looked a little bit like stop signs. You weren't careful, you know, and get the edge just perfect.
Right, right.
But I also figured out that if you had a bunch of half-inch berries, that if you did have a few that looked like stop signs, nobody was going to notice.
Right. Well, just look past those. It's okay.
Exactly. The quilt that I had reproduced was from the 1840s, and I noticed her berries weren't absolutely perfect either. Sometimes I think we get too wrapped up in perfection.
Oh, I totally, totally agree with you. If you look at old quilts, I mean, there's not a lot of perfection. You know, there's not, everything isn't totally perfect. A lot is, you know, of course we all like that, but not necessary.
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah. So you're also working on a pretty fun project for your job, redrafting some of the patterns.
Actually, I'm in the process of redrafting them all.
Ah, all.
Yeah, the Star printed, like I think it was like 1,068 patterns during, from between the years of 1929 through 1961. Mm-hmm. And they started out and they ran very regularly in the paper. Mm-hmm. And then as the war years came, they got a little bit sporadic because the same ingredients used to make ink were also made to use explosives. So it became difficult to get the ink. So they cut down on the paper as much as possible.
Wow.
And then once the war was over, you know, people could buy a really nice chenille bedspread and didn't have to make those blankets anymore.
Right.
So quilting kind of really suffered for a while there. And in all that time, there were 1,068 patterns printed, and that's one huge resource for quilters.
Right.
And so we have this subscription service at Star called My Star Collection, and it costs like $20 a year. Mm-hmm. And every year you get a new pattern delivered to your email. And it's all been redrafted. There's templates supplied with it and rotary cutting instructions.
Well, Edie, you know, this is, you have so much information. Can I have you come back on the show sometime so we can do some more?
I would love that.
Okay, good. Everybody go visit Edie at pickledish.com. That's Kansas City Star website, and we'll have her back on. So we're going to take a little break, and we'll be right back. Thanks,
Sounds
Edie.
Great. Bye.
Looking for fresh, simple, and fun projects and ideas? Check out the current issue of Quilts & More magazine at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
The Fall 2012 Moda Fabrics Fashion Show is about to start. First up, the exotic fabrics of Cusco by Kate Spain and Chant, with rich fuchsia, indigo, and orchid. Do you hear that? It's the ocean breezes coming from the Seascapes collection by Death Strain. It's no mystery. You'll love the Get a Clue with Nancy Drew line. Hearts and flowers and houndstooth, oh my. Kissing Booth by Basic Gray brings romance to the runway. Stay tuned for more runway reporting. Visit your local quilt shop to see these fashionable lines and more from Moda Fabrics.
Introducing the new Bernina 7 Series machines with the latest sewing and embroidery innovations, including an extended free arm and embroidery area, the Bernina Stitch Regulator, and a world's first, the B9 Hook. Sew quieter, faster, and without interruption. With up to 1,000 stitches per minute and 80% more bobbin thread capacity than our standard bobbins, there's no limit to your creativity. For more information, visit Bernina.com/7Series. Bernina, made to create.
Make the most of your sewing machine by watching Machine Minute videos brought to you by Baby Lock. Learn about popular topics like tension troubles, stitch length, needles, buttonholes, zipper basics, and more. Watch these videos at allpeoplequilt.com/videos.
To find a quilt shop near you that carries the latest issues of Quilt Sampler and Quilts and More magazines, go to allpeoplequilt.com and click on Find a Shop.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. I have CNT author, designer, machine quilter extraordinaire Barbara Persing here. Barbara is an amazing designer, and she is a quilter that has so much fabulous information. Her newest book is called Listen to Your Quilt, and I'm very excited to learn about the things that she has in this book. So hi, Barbara. How are you doing?
Great. Hi. How are you?
This is amazing. I love the title, Listen to Your Quilt. The whole core of this book is that you're going to teach us not to be afraid to pick a quilt design. Is that right?
Yeah, and also where to get your ideas from and how your quilt can kind of give you your ideas. It's not really a blank piece of paper.
Ah, so, and you have been machine quilting for 12 years. I mean, that's how you started as a quilter. You just, started quilting for others, right?
Correct. Yep.
Wow. And so that means you've worked with a lot of people to select designs.
I've worked with a lot of people and a really big variety of quilters. I mean, my first misunderstanding when I bought my machine was that quilters were going to come to me and say, this is what I want you to put on my quilt.
Oh.
I didn't realize they were going to come to me and say, I don't know, you tell me.
Right.
So I kind of came up with, when you do something repetitively, even, you know, whatever your everyday tasks are, I think that you find a way that you go through them. And so that's what kind of happened with me. When people were bringing me their quilts, I started to replay the same thoughts and questions in my head to help me get on focus of what their quilt was going to need. And so that's what the book is really about, looking at the quilt and taking all your cues from the quilt.
So let's talk a bit. Now, first of all, just so people know, you're an award-winning long-arm quilter. You do your quilting on a long-arm, but what we're talking about can be done on any kind of machine.
Absolutely. The decision on how to quilt things is the same for everybody, no matter what technique you're using.
So what are... people are afraid, aren't they, to mess up their quilt?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely, they are afraid. And I think that when you give people tools, they become less afraid. And so my book really is about four questions that you ask yourself, and hopefully by the end of those questions, you're able to focus in on what your quilt really needs. And I talk about things like the types of fabric you use, whether you use solids or you've used prints, and how quilting obviously is more apparent on your solids and not as apparent on your prints, and how that plays into your decision-making process. Are you making, a traditional quilt, a contemporary quilt? That changes your process of what you might want to think about. Because I think kind of marrying the right designs to the right quilt is kind of like getting dressed for the day. If it's cold, you wear all the appropriate clothing. If it's raining, you wear, your raincoat, your rain boots. So it's kind of the same thing, teaching yourself to have it come second nature when you look at things. And everyone has a whole different personal arsenal of designs that they like to use. And it kind of, the book is to help you think about how best to apply those designs.
So where is a place that people, maybe you could give us just, one sort of top, direction to get people going who are kind of fearful? How would you suggest that they look at their quilt to break it down?
I think that when you look at your quilt, I think sometimes you get an immediate impression. If I look at a quilt and I think, wow, that quilt is done. You know what I mean? Like that the top, it's pieced, and I don't think I need to add anything specifically to that quilt. As far as a design element, like the quilt looks complete, then you're really safe thinking about an all-over design because you're just looking to enhance what's already there. If you look at a quilt and you're like, wow, this this area is really kind of plain, or it looks like it needs something. When you look at a quilt and you're thinking it needs something, then they're the quilts that you want to say, well, what if I put something really fancy in that area?
Right, right. Okay.
And so it's kind of, it can be as simple as that. And how you're going to use your quilt, I mean, let's face it, if you're going to put it on your bed and wash it and let your kids jump on it, then that helps you decide also. You're certainly not going to take the hours to do heirloom quilting, right? I mean, then you'd want to hang somebody. But if it's going to be on a wall and people are going to get to view it as a piece of art, then you're thinking, well, I'm going to do some really tight, detailed quilting because the quilting is going to be as important as the piecework.
Yeah, and what do you have a different approach when you look at applique? Because, you know, applique often, for a lot of people, has a more tonal background that the applique is on. So, like, your background wouldn't be busy. So there tends to be often more open space around the shapes.
Definitely. And, you know, it's funny, after quilting for people who have so many different types of personalities and make a lot of different choices, sometimes when I look at an applique quilt, I just think, wow, the background just needs to be the background. And to me, that's when you want to quilt it so that it doesn't draw any attention. You know, lots of times in older quilts, more traditional quilts, and the applique work is beautiful, you know, and really nice, heavy stippling still is the best choice in that quilt. Because it makes your background even, it makes your background be the background, and it makes your applique be the focus.
All right, so like if you're saying you want to make something so it is not the focus, then, you know, would you use like a matching thread color then to
the background? Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think, and, you know, thread color is the last question I have you ask yourself, because you can make great quilting choices, and then by choosing a bad thread color, you know, have it not come out as beautiful as it was in your head. And for me, the rule of thumb is most times your thread is going to match. And I think that most people get the best results when they do that. It's hard to know when to choose a contrasting thread. And when you choose a contrasting thread, the quilting becomes the focus. And the quilting needs to be the focus in very few types of quilts. You know what I'm saying?
Right, right. So, like a lot of the modern quilts, so people are putting out modern quilts now that have a lot of open space. It's there to showcase the quilting.
Right, but if you notice, they're still using matching thread.
Yes. Well, they do, don't they?
Right. It's, and that way, what they've added to that quilt is texture.
In texture, right.
Where if you use the contrasting thread, you then kind of add design. So they...
Okay. So it's like another layer.
Yes, exactly. Something else to draw your attention, where I think in modern quilts, they're meant to be kind of more quiet.
And you have really nice displays in your book that listen to your quilt, that show, you know, the thread being more obvious and not obvious, so people can actually see an example of that.
Yeah, what I tried to do in the book is show examples of, you know, I kind of put quilts into categories because it helps me decide on the quilting. And all of the pictures in the book, at the bottom of the picture, it kind of tells you what my thought process was and why I chose the design, the thread, how much quilting, all of that is written at the bottom of each page. And there's contemporary quilts, there's traditional quilts in the book, there's kids' quilts. Everything that you're going to come across as a quilter, and it's going to help you focus in on what to think about.
I got excited when I was looking through the book because one of the people used my fabric line.
Oh, awesome!
Yeah, The Night in Avalon by Barbara Kenny. That's my fabric.
And, you know, she's been a client of mine for a really long time, and Barbara always does beautiful piecework. I love her color combinations. And she's one of those customers who says, you know, I don't know, whatever you're inspired to do, you know? So it can be fun to play with that. And actually, the fabric that was used in the border, I loved it so much that I used your motif as a quilting idea.
Ah.
So I used the swirls and the flowers in the quilt. So a lot of times you can get great ideas just by looking at your fabrics.
Yay, it was fun. And this one, you also showed the back. So some of the threads were, like, when you match, that's one question, Barbara. When you're matching threads, it's very obvious on this one because you showed the back and you can see the lighter colored fabrics on the front. You use the lighter thread, and then the darker was a darker thread. So on the back, there's two thread colors. Some people don't like that look.
I think, you know, for me, your first choice is always what's going to look best on the front. Mm-hmm. So if you are a person who is, you know, picky about what the back of your quilt is going to look like, or you really have an idea, then you need to think about what thread colors are going to be used on the front and pick your backing fabric that's going to go with those thread colors. What was cool about Barbara's quilt was that by using that black, it made the back of the quilt look like a quilt in itself because all the quilting became the whole design, and she loved that. So when people are picking their backing thread, they really should be thinking, I mean, their backing fabric, they should be thinking about, wonder what's, you know, what thread am I going to use on this?
Because it's
it is
hard
going
to
make a big difference.
It's hard to use two different colors, like a light on the top and a dark in your bobbin, even for a long arm, right?
It is. It really is. I mean, I don't like to see those little picks in contrasting color, you know, and you know, a machine that runs that fast, and even with a domestic machine, it's hard to keep your tension 100% perfect. So I think it is hard to match, especially in that quilt. Like, one of the thread colors I used was gold, and if I had used a black bobbin thread, it would have really come up on that gold fabric.
Right. I'm a fan of matching your bobbin and your top thread. I always have. But every once in a while, I run into somebody, particularly if they go to a long armor, who hasn't thought that through. And they wanted it all the same on the back. So choose your fabric backing carefully.
Carefully. Exactly.
And what, let me get this in quick before we finish, because you not only do the machine quilting, but you also work with your sister and have a design business called 4and6designs.com with Mary.
And it's, you know, it's great to have the opportunity to work with my sister, and it's funny because we collab, you know, we're so lucky we collaborate effortlessly with each other. And that's the fun part, when someone else can help you finish a project. It's great when they say, oh, no, we need to do this or we need to do that. And that's been a great venture for us, and has brought us very close to sisters when we get to travel together and teach and, you know, show other people our techniques. And that's a lot of fun.
Well, this has been great information, Barbara. Good luck with your book. It's a beautiful book.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And thank you for having me. I mean, also on your show today was Gail, who's practically my neighbor.
Oh, there you go. It's a small world. You can visit Barbara at BarbaraPersing, P-E-R-S-I-N-G.com, or she when Mary are at 4and6, the numbers, designs.com. Thanks, Barbara.
Thank you.
This is American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. We'll be back next week.
Remember to visit allpeoplequilt.com for more information on topics from today's show, as well as how-to videos, free printable patterns, and additional tips and techniques. Thanks.